Welcome to Tech Theater Clubhouse Conversations. Hi, I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. My background is in the theater, and I love connecting it to technology and the internet and all that jazz.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. I've been building and operating startups for over 10 years, and so I try to bring a tech and media perspective to these conversations. Every Tuesday on Clubhouse, we have amazing discussions with brilliant people who sit at the intersection of technology and theater.
Today, we are joined on the podcast by one of those brilliant people we're always talking about. Michael Novak is the artistic director of Paul Taylor Dance Company here in New York, based on the Lower East Side. They're one of the oldest modern dance companies in New York City. And we've been incredibly lucky to get to work with Michael the last couple of years as Broadway Unlocked produced and co-created the 2020 and 2021 virtual benefits for Paul Taylor Dance Company. I'm so freaking excited to talk to Michael today. Joe, how are you feeling about this?
I cannot wait. I just want to see Michael. I want to talk to Michael. I want to hear stories about Paul Taylor. Like, you know, we've gotten a good amount from all the people that we've met across time working with them. And I just want to go deeper and into the archives, if you will.
Are you going to dance? Does everybody on the podcast, listen to the podcast, know that you danced in college?
I don't know if it has ever come up. But yeah, in college, I started dabbling in like modern and contemporary dance and was like, oh, like, I have all these feelings and I need them to come out through my limbs.
Oh my God, that's so real.
So there's an extra little bit of excitement for me there.
That's amazing. Well, I frequently, I think I've said this to you too, say that like on the bingo card of where my life was going and what I do, collaborating this deeply with one of the most prolific modern dance companies in the United States was never on that bingo card. And some days I kind of think about it, and I'm just like, I cannot believe we are this tiny, tiny part of the Paul Taylor Dance Company story now. So that just makes this conversation triply as exciting to be able to really like pick Michael's brain and have him share all of the great and beautiful wisdom and history that he inherited when he took this company over.
Now with all that gravitas put around it, I'm like nervous. I'm nervous for this conversation. But don't I'm sure worry. It's going to be amazing.
I was going to say, in about 3 seconds, we'll both be total dweebs on this thing. And you'll be like, what were you nervous for? All right, with that, let's get to it. Please enjoy this very special episode of Tech Theater with our friend and collaborator, Michael Novak, artistic director of the Paul Taylor Dance Company. Hey, Michael, thanks for joining us.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
Oh, my goodness. We're so good. Thanks for joining this. This is usually a podcast about technology and theater, but today it's about the arts and technology, I think, right?
Yes, and dance.
And dance.
Yes.
We are so excited to talk to you. So as everyone who listens to this podcast knows, we've gone on and 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 on about Paul Taylor for the last 3 months.
Wait, who's Paul Taylor?
So maybe a really good place to start would be to talk a little bit about who you are, what you do with Paul Taylor, where y'all are at as a company, because I feel like that's a big, we skipped all that one. When we talk about Paul Taylor.
Yeah, happy to do that. So I'll give you the quickest footnote in podcast history. Paul Taylor was born in 1930 in Wilkinsburg, Virginia, and he formed his own dance company in 1954. He actually was a student at Juilliard and was a founding member of the Merce Cunningham Dance Company. He danced with Martha Graham. He actually danced as a guest artist with New York City Ballet, all before forming his own company. And he was founder, artistic director, choreographer until his death in 2018. So 64 years, creating someone like just transforming the landscape of dance and of modern dance specifically. And I was a dancer in the company from 2010 to 2019. Actually started at the Taylor School, which was founded about 35 years ago, and was in the school for 3 years, joined the company in 2010. Paul Taylor appointed me artistic director 3 months before his passing, and I assumed that role in August of 2018. And then there was a global pandemic in March of 2020.
Cool.
And here we are.
Oh my God. On Zoom.
Exactly. On Zoom.
Still. Did you come out of college wanting to be a Taylor dancer or to be a company dancer even? Was that your intention?
That's a great question because I'll say yes and no. So I went to college to the Columbia University School of General Studies because I actually had a passion for arts administration, and I was considering a master's degree either in arts administration or an MBA. And I wanted to go to Columbia because of the liberal arts background. But I was always passionate about dance. I had been performing since I was 10. But I loved systems. I loved the idea of creating engaging experiences for audiences or for consumers in general. I've waited on tables. I've worked in window displays. I kind of have an eclectic background, but all about creating an environment and an evening or an experience that people really feel like they have a transformative moment, whether it's with food or theater. And while I was at Columbia, I decided that rather than going for my master's, that I was going to try to have a professional dance career one more time. And I was 27 at the time. So I was a bit late in the dance world. I had worked professionally, but I decided to go back to school. So, and Paul Taylor was my dream company. And I auditioned once in 2008. And I made it all the way to the end of the audition process. And Paul Taylor told me the timing wasn't right, but try not to go anywhere. And then so I didn't go anywhere. And then in 2010, there was another audition and I went and I got the job.
Congrats. I'm so like excited for you, even though this literally happened already.
Like, long ago.
And I love people's stories because they're so much more complex than it seems from the surface, right? Everyone looks at Michael Novak now and it's like, he's just amazing and great and the best and everything is easy, right? Nothing is easy. Nothing is just comes to you. And to hear that sort of almost meandering path towards where you are,
yeah,
it's kind of amazing. And it like gives me hope as someone who's really ambitious about becoming a professional dancer at the age of 34 right now.
Yeah, when I got the job dancing for Paul Taylor, I had 7 other jobs.
Just
that,
7.
That tracks. I mean, that sounds
period.
Right.
End of sentence. No, but I was trying to make it work. I had student loans from Columbia. I still have student loans from Columbia. but like health insurance and living in New York City and freelancing as an artist, trying to make it work. It was a very indirect path to what I'm doing, but I'm doing exactly what I set out to do, which is to really create art and create opportunities to engage with art that transform lives. So it's oddly all working towards that one aim that I had when I first went to Columbia.
I wonder too, for you, because I know for me that having that background of like having to have hustled and, you know, made all my own cash my whole life and was a contractor and an artist, and now being in leadership, I've found for me it informs how I look at leading a company. Is that true for you?
Yes. I would say that every experience I have had is informing what I'm doing right now. Everything is valuable. But when I say that, I mean that like having learned from those experiences and taken advantage of those opportunities, those networks, you have to do the work as well. But every part of my journey has informed who I am and where I am and where I want to go. And I value all of it.
Mm-hmm. Probably not the least of which was being able to go limp and roll with the pandemic right after you took over a company.
It's funny. I did not expect the pandemic. I didn't see that coming.
Weird.
Yeah, I did it. I didn't, did not think that was going to be heading our way.
How bad, not badly, that's not the right word, but I don't know what the right word is. Like how bigly did that shake up your expectations of like what your job or what was in front of you as you started to take the company over?
I think what the pandemic, well, there were a couple of things that happened with the pandemic that I thought were very fascinating. And one was that, I do have mentors and people in the industry who I go to for advice and counsel, insights, and kind of like a, here's where I'm at, here's what I'm thinking, you know, almost like a checks and balances system. Mm-hmm. And it was early on, I called a few of them and I was like, well, surely in all your wisdom and experience, there is something that you can draw from that contextualizes what we're going through. And this was like March or April of 2020. And all of them were like, no, this is not, there's no reference point to this. And the closest reference point we have really are the people who know of the Spanish flu or have relatives who were alive during it. So it created this sense of kind of like a clean slate of like, okay, we're all figuring it out. No one knows what they're doing. What do we do? And what can we do? And so it was also, in addition to being an incredibly frightening time, there was a liberating quality to it. Because the arts are going to endure. So help me. Like that was like, what are we doing for dance? Where is it going? How are the artists? What are our students at our school going through? Like we have to keep the art alive. So one of the first things we did is we went to education. It was the first thing I did. We put all of our classes on Instagram Live for free. And at that time, so this is like March, probably this is like the last week of March, 2020, when the cases in Northern Italy were very, very bad. And we were getting messages on Instagram from students in Italy who were taking our classes like, please keep doing the classes. We're connecting with the company. We're able to move. Like, this is helping us go through what we were going through. The goal of getting the art out there in any capacity and reaching people, we got an immediate feedback of validation in terms of like what we're doing matters. We have to keep it going. And then how do we keep honing the system? As we started to learn, this was not going to be a 5 or 6 week absence. This is going to be a much longer journey. And then after education was kind of set and stable, then we went to the company and doing work with the company virtually. We did teacher training, coaching, classes. It was a whole kind of like, how do we holistically take care of the artists and the staff and connect to what we're here to do, which is to dance and to make dance accessible for people.
Yeah, Jess and I talk often about how, you know, the pandemic and other just external factors generally becoming either forcing mechanisms or catalysts for things that you maybe wouldn't have done or that you wanted to do but couldn't figure out how to prioritize or how to make it work. And using the Instagram example, or honestly anywhere you want to take us as an example, like, was that a thing that was even on your radar at the time to be like, we want to take these classes to Instagram or just digitally generally? Or was that just a reaction to, hey, we have to, you know, support these people and keep getting content out and keeping our community together?
I think there had been a lot of conversations within the field about education and dance education as it exists in the digital space. And when you think of what fitness and what the fitness industry has been able to do in terms of yoga, in terms of like weight training, you know, you can go on YouTube and there's a number of platforms and influencers who, you know, have taken fitness to like a private digital realm. So dance was following that track. So it was on my brain. Doing it on a social media platform live was something, and unedited and unscripted, like this is the class, and you're not teaching it to people. You're teaching it to your phone. So that was an interesting experience for our educators in terms of like, they're not getting the energy in the room.
Oh yeah.
Right. Your education isn't just a syllabi. It's also the people you're working with, how you're supporting them, seeing where they're at, evolving exercises, and combinations so they can evolve. And the Instagram live element was a definite shift. So we figured out ways to not replace the interactive experience that you might normally get in a real person-to-person class, but augment the feedback so the teachers knew what to work on, what was working, what wasn't. So that was one thing. We have an extensive archive here that goes back to 1954. And within that, there are scores of videos that we have access to that audiences haven't seen. So I went into archives and I started pulling out progressively throughout many, 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 many weeks, these rare videos of the repertory, and started building a massive fundraising platform that allowed patrons and audience members at different levels access to these different archival films, insights from the dancers, conversations between me and other visual artists or lighting designers or costume designers, so that even though we weren't performing, audiences, especially our most loyal, like our nearest and dearest, were actually getting an edutainment element, as it's called. So they were either nostalgic for the 70s and 80s, and then we would like have a film of like, this was the original cast of this piece. How amazing is this? So it enriched their experience of the Paul Taylor world, so that that passion kept going. And we found that particularly for our patrons who don't live in New York City, which is where we're based in the Lower East Side, our patrons loved it. And they felt more connected to the company. Because when we tour, we don't always get to hit the same cities every year. Sometimes it may take us 2 or 3 years to get back to a certain city. So our audience base actually felt really engaged with us and the work and the stories of the artists, which was a huge success. But I don't think we ever would have created that platform as elaborate as it existed had it not been for the pandemic.
I have a random question that I've been dying to ask you for 2 years on this note that I'm so excited I get to ask. Okay. I notice every year when we're working on the closing credits that you have like a company that is your archivist, or right, that handles your archives?
Yes.
What goes into that? Because you have 147 Paul pieces, right? And then 180 something total with all the new choreographers. So what does that company do for you? I'm so curious.
So a lot of it is, it's cataloging and digitizing a vast percentage of it. So like one example is Paul Taylor, when he would make a dance, he would have a notebook, and every dance got its own notebook. And especially if you go back to the 50s and the 60s, he would write down everything, every step, every count, every music note. He would draw sketches. He would draw costume sketches. And we have one notebook for every dance. So every page has to get scanned, has to get cataloged.
Wow.
And it's a massive project. And that's just the notebooks. You know, we can go into photos. We have videos. Our video archive is huge. And we have something called the Repertory Preservation Project, where we digitize and record as much of the repertory as we possibly can. And I would say out of 147 dances, probably 130 exist within this preservation model.
Nice.
There's one or two that are lost to time, although we have Paul's notes. But that's a massive catalog process. And we have access to that, and we update that, especially as new works come in. We archive them. So it's an ongoing living thing. I think it's interesting because archives tend to be thought of something that's like, it's in the past, you know, it like protects the past, but the archives is like, it is a thing that is constantly growing, constantly changing. Technology is constantly changing. How you preserve things, how you search things, is always evolving as well. So it's a very real organism within the much larger ecosystem.
Yeah, I like the idea that the archive itself is alive. Like, it's not just a time capsule. Like, me experiencing the archive and getting to see, you know, these pages, or my own, like, very personal experience with something like this was meeting and getting to know Andy LeBeau, and then seeing him in Dancemaker and being like, oh my goodness, it's young Andy. Like, this is incredible. And so, like, mapping it through time and, like, having that connection inside of me as enabled by the, like, yeah, the archival of this footage is amazing.
It's a huge resource. I mean, the other day, I actually, we're going to be performing at the Joyce Theater here in New York next summer. And we're reconstructing a work from 1958 that hasn't been seen since 1959.
Ooh.
And the footage is black and white, as you might expect. So we don't know what the color of the costumes are. So,
oh my God,
I was able to go into our archive. I was able to go into Paul's notebook, and I was able to pull. And fortunately, he has a colored drawing of all the costumes of the piece. and we copied it. We brought it to production, and then they were looking at it. We're talking about materials and stuff. But like, it's just one example of that's a resource that's right there. And even dancers will often go in and they'll look at things that they're reconstructing. Another fun tidbit about this work that we're actually bringing back. We have the video. We gave it to the dancers to look at, to learn from, which we often do, especially for early, early work. We also had Paul's notebook. So we copied Paul's notes about the dance, gave them to the dancers as part of this reconstruction process. And the dancers are going through Paul's notes, and it turns out the video was flipped when it was transferred.
Like left to right?
Yeah.
Oh.
So the dancers are looking at Paul's notes, and they're like, on stage right, this happens. And they're like, oh, on the video, he's on stage left. And they're like, wow. And so we go through the whole thing, and the whole video during the transfer got flipped. We never would have known that had we not had Paul's notebook. So it's also this fun moment of like, what you see isn't always what's correct.
Yeah.
Because dancers do make mistakes as well, you know, and there are changes that happen. So it's like cross-referencing art, which is really, I think, exciting, because then it makes history alive again. Like it's, I often say with the dancers, it's not about preserving the past, it's about preserving the present. Which means like, what are we doing here? What are we doing now? Mm-hmm. Like you are writing history. Like what people may say about it in 10 or 20 or 30 years, that's up to them. But like right here, right now, these are choices that we're making. We're writing history. It's a very real thing. It's living.
I love right now imagining that dancer sitting there, like reading through the notes and being like, no, I must be wrong. And then it's like a couple more pages.
Paul write it down like, wrong? Yeah.
Like, ah, could this possibly be the case that something is wrong? Right. And then that beautiful realization that you all get to have together to be like, we unearthed something. Like it's like digging for treasures. And like,
or there's no music either with the video file.
Oh my gosh.
It's fun. It can get really fun, you know, and then you go into the files and you see Paul's notes and you find scores and you start mixing and matching things. It's a really exciting part of the job, actually.
I feel like y'all should be documenting this process. Mm-hmm. Like these stories
yeah.
are amazing. And like, yeah, they give you a little bit of more context for that information that you're looking at and sifting through, and to give that perspective to people to then consume that too. And just give us more stories.
Yeah.
That's, I think this story is like one of a thousand stories that I've heard that really like typifies my sense of the Paul Taylor Company, which I say to like it, that my definition of that is from administration all the way through the company, through the audiences, right? Which is that like, and I actually will bring this back around to technology, that the old model of the arts, right, was, and I can mostly only speak from an actor's point of view, right? But I think this is similar across a lot of disciplines, was like, kind of lots of space between factions of people working on a production. And like, if you were an actor, you came in the room and you said your lines and you took direction and you walked out and you were done. You know what I mean? And it was very, and like I had an acting teacher say, you can't be a smart actor. You just like, literally someone said that to me, that you can't be a smart person and be a great actor, which was horrific, but whatever, it's fine. I know why he said it. And like in this new era of, because I think it's technology enabled, like there's this creator model where everyone's really like hands-on and in digging into the fun of making art. And you got that is something I've always been just so attracted to about Paul Taylor Dance Company, because I don't think I believed it could exist in an institution before I met you. And I'm heavily biased. Like that is my own problem, right? Like that's just like my strong willful bias. But your commitment and not even commitment, whatever, fuck that word. The way that you let everyone be who they are, and that everyone has a voice, at least in my experience across your work, and that you get into the weeds of those. It's not just the port-a-bras and the dance step, you know? I just think it's so extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it.
It's a very, one of the things that drew me to the company outside of the movement style, which is very athletic. Paul was a competitive swimmer in college before he went to Juilliard, actually. And it comes from the back, and he was very tall, very long. And so the movement style resonated with me. But there's a very unique emotional sincerity to his dances and to the artists who perform them. And he's known as the master of light and dark, which in kind of in a broad terms basically means that he was known for making dances that were hilarious, like guffawing, like slapstick comedy. And then in the next half hour, he could present some of the most horrific, controversial modern dances ever made. And as an artist, you live within this emotional expanse. And what it does is that if you're going to authentically inhabit a feeling or an emotion so that the work succeeds, you have to do that with a group of people who you trust. Mm. And all of the artists, whether by their own choosing or the repertory pulling it out of them, have to have an emotional honesty to make the work successful. And that creates a very special work environment where there is fearlessness, there is trust, there is tenderness. And it comes from a very genuine place, because when it's not genuine, it stands out. And then it's my job and our rehearsal director's job to be like, you're acting like you're in love, or you're mm-hmm. acting like, don't play it, just be. And it creates a very distinct culture where there is collaboration and there is feedback. And there, you know, I also like that. Like, I'm a harmonizer. Like, I like hearing all the different ideas. I like synthesizing things. I think the genius is often in the room. Obviously, someone has to make the decision, you know, usually to make that call. But I like getting, those of you who are listening, I'm like gesturing with my hands that like my fingers are moving far apart and getting closer and closer and closer together. It's like all these little, like what seemingly disparate ideas start to coalesce to reveal like a major theme or an idea or what the vibe is. And then that's what you address or talk about or move forward from. That's a leadership style as well, as much as it is a value system, I think, in the work.
I was going to ask you to go like a little deeper into the concept of like a leadership style. Cause, you know, I spent most of my career inside of like startups, and startups are weird beasts because it is a very collaborative environment, but there is also usually like a visionary sitting at the top that was the first person to be like, I had this idea and I'm trying to take it somewhere, but I cannot take it there myself. Mm. And so there's both coaching, but then there's collaboration, and there's just like, it's a complex mess of feelings and emotions and feedback. And it sounds so similar, especially that great hand gesture you were doing that no one can see. And I just wanted to, ask you to go a little deeper into like what it means to be a leader for Paul Taylor.
I think leadership is kind of, I think leadership is defined by who you are as a person and how you relate to the world. I think it's inevitable that who you are is going to dictate how you manage teams and problems and opportunities. And I'm quiet and I'm strategic, and I love to listen and watch. And that comes from, I kind of have always been that way. And as an artist, that served me incredibly well to read the room, to read the choreographer, to read my colleagues, and figure out, again, back to the sense of like synthesis, like what is needed at this time so that we can be efficient. So that wasn't necessarily a leadership role, but I was playing the room so that we could succeed. Arguably a bit more passively than I am now as a artistic director, but those things do translate forward. And I like listening. You learn a lot when you learn a lot when you're quiet and you listen. You hear a lot. You also, and then if you know how to write, if you know how to ask the right questions, you can sometimes get to like what the real issue is, or what's the real concern, what's the real fear that we're addressing. So that's one layer of it. But for me, it's also a deeply rooted belief system that art is at the center of the room. Mm-hmm. And we are here to serve modern dance, and to propel it forward, and to respect where we came from, and to move it forward. It will exist long after me, and it existed long before me. You know, I'm not the end. You know, modern dance is the thing that we're here for. And that's also a unique philosophy, I feel, that I'm like, no, this is bigger than all of us. It's going to continue to be bigger than all of us. You know, what are we doing to serve it? So that's almost like a servant leadership, not to like a person, but to like an idea. And that's something that is imbued in everything that I do. And then I would say one of the challenges about leadership, and the pandemic altered this, was that leaders need to be 3 to 4 years ahead. And as a performer, I was always, what am I doing tomorrow? What's happening Wednesday? What's my rehearsal schedule? What's my performance schedule? Like, you're very focused on the next thing. What are you producing next? And the shift into leadership, where people are asking you, and they're asking me now, like, what is the programming for 24, 25? Is a very real question that's now happening because the pandemic's starting to subside.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredibly far from now.
Which is incredibly far from now. And when I was asked the question, I was like, you know, I'll get back to you. That's a great question. I'm going to get back to you because Omicron, we're still in this. But
well, now you're using the pandemic as an excuse, Michael.
I do love consistency, I'll also add. So this has been very exciting. But trying to get an odd way out of the present and almost be like a prophet and try to like get 3 to 4 years ahead. And then you can get stuck there. It's very interesting. Like, I'll have days where I'm like, I'm working on 3-4 years from now and I have no clue what day it is. I don't know what we're doing in the studio that day. Mm-hmm. I know it's happening in May of 2025. That I'm good with. But like, relationship to time is funny. And our whole industry works that way. So with the pandemic, it's been fascinating because everyone was like, we can't think, we tried to think 2 years ahead in March of 2020. And then that window just kept getting shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, to the point that it was like, okay, what do we know this month? What are we doing in 2 months from now? It was a big flip for the industry, I think. Mm. And now the industry's starting to accelerate back to that kind of macro view.
I wonder if, just in terms of that, talking about the future, because we have just a bit of time, and I wonder if you would be down for talking a little bit about technology and how you're thinking about it in the future, but specifically, because we don't get to do this very often, we're always proselytizing, obviously, who's surprised about that, about technology on this podcast, but because we know that you all are have been so innovative and risk-taking, I think it kind of gives us some space to talk a little bit about what's really tricky about technology in the arts, because I feel like that's something we don't talk about a lot on here. And we know that the folks listening are all going, I was listening to you tell the story of taking over the company in the pandemic. And I was like, oh my God, everybody's going to be listening to this, thinking of their own like slight variation on that story. You know yeah. what I mean? And going, I'm not alone. mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's a big thing I've learned from you, specifically around dance, is like all the fascinating things you're juggling as you think about an education class going on Zoom in dance specifically, right? Or filming a dance piece. Like what, or you can even play best and worst. Like, what's the best part looking forward, you know, with the technology and the ideas you've had around integrating technology into Paul Taylor's mission to reach people? Mm-hmm. And like, what's the hardest or most tricky things that you're thinking about and just like not figuring out quite yet?
I think it's a lot of great questions. So I would say the best thing about technology kind of as we move forward, I think, is the element of accessibility. And, you know, particularly when it comes to performing arts, there are people who can't travel to New York to see our company, or can't travel to the next city, you know, who can't afford tickets. And how do we create opportunities, whether they're digital or in person, that like bringing art to the people? So technology opens up a huge world in terms of promoting the art form, and creating an awareness that it exists and that it's out there. So it's accessibility, but it's also like, it's education and validation of the art form existing and what it can do. I would also say that when the whole pandemic started, I was obsessed with story and people's stories about our work specifically for our patrons and our students. But I think technology's role in illuminating stories of individuals as it relates to a larger theme, which could be, I think that's why cooking shows like can be so huge, or like anything where like you learn about a person and then you see their craft, or you see what they're doing or what they're trying. It gives a lens to the human experience of which that thing becomes how their self is being manifest. I think technology offers us that space in a way that we don't do that in live theater. Like you don't go to a show and hear everyone's personal stories about how they, I mean, you like you have resumes and bios, but you're not listening to like their voice tell you, this means so much to me. I wish this person was here. They are like, you don't know that. You come and you see the art, and that's beautiful and important. But the way technology can kind of add seasoning to that experience to enrich it for people, I think is huge. And I would say one of the things that also worked really well in the pandemic that we started doing is when we moved, actually, no, when we did our virtual intensives with our school, and when we did our in-person intensives with our school, we introduced an introduction to dance filmmaking course.
Ooh, cool.
So dancers were not only taking dance classes, but they were learning through alumni from our company about how to shoot for film and how to choreograph for film and how to edit. And that was fascinating because technology is a medium that is almost like the first, it's the first gate for people to relate to the world, I would say. Maybe not the first, but it's a primary, like how I relate on my device is actually an expression of who I am. So when students, I found, were able to create through that medium, how they expressed themselves was very profound and very different from them just creating a movement phrase. It actually revealed a different facet of who they were. And therefore, our educators got to know them better. And then it accelerated the notes and like, oh, there's something in there. Okay. Like it allowed them to be more effective as teachers. And therefore, the educational process was, I think, far more enriching. So technology sits, I think, in this interesting place, again, of like seasoning the experience. The most challenging thing about technology, I would say, is that it's evolving at such an incredibly fast rate. And culture is also evolving at a slightly different rate to it, but it's almost like we as a species can't keep up with the speed of technology. So where's that gap? And then how do we stay on track or try to get ahead of it to know where it's going? And that's very tricky. And I don't have any like answers on that, but I'm aware that it exists.
For sure. I'm like imagining right now, like that speed that you were just talking about, and how, you know, back with YouTube, there were these trends that would take off and everyone would make a video of that trend, their take on it, right? That seasoning that you talked about, which I'm 100% stealing. Thank you for that. Yeah. And how TikTok has just even further accelerated that. And there are these little trends, which are in their own right, like these little bits of culture that, that spread across the globe, and then are, they start and they're over before you even realize they happen in many times. And it's, how can we even keep up as a culture? Or is it going to just like fragment us in ways to little pods of culture, which is kind of cool in its own right, because right now we have a pretty global culture and there's a lot of like ubiquity across the country and around the world. So allowing like these little silos of creativity to pop up.
I just think you never know. I mean, I think when we started coming out of the pandemic, because we've been touring as a company since February of this year, when we've been on the road a lot, I like being the company that says yes to trying things, because you learn. You learn what doesn't work, which is very valid. You learn what works, and you never know. You never know. I was just talking to one of our teachers who students came to take her class on like Wednesday last week. And they came because they saw the Instagram post of the class on Monday, and the class looked amazing. And they were like, I want to take that class. And they learned the combination off the Instagram video. So when they came to class on Wednesday, they knew it.
No way.
Ooh.
You just don't, but like, it's, you don't know who you're impacting. You don't know what lives you're changing. You don't know what door you just opened. And that's kind of the exciting thing about technology and a lot of digital media. It's not just, it's more than awareness. It's like, you don't know what switch you just turned on for somebody that now they may go see a show, or they may take a class, or they may talk to their friends and they may be like, oh my God, I love Val Taylor. Yeah. How do you know? Like you need to come to the show, you know, like you just don't know. And I kind of live in that space of like, well, you don't know until you know, and you don't know what you don't know. So let's try it, and then we'll know what we know, and we still won't know what we won't know. I don't know.
It is so appropriate for artists, right? Because when you were saying that, I was just thinking, right, like businesses like create the feedback in technology with likes and analytics and stuff like that. And like for us in the arts, exactly what you said, so much of this is about the kid in, I don't know, Idaho, who's doesn't have enough money to go to dance school or whatever, I don't know, come to New York and audition, but maybe because they can take a class online or see your videos, their life gets a little better, and you'll never ever know that.
Yeah.
Which is such an artist thing to be comfortable with. You know what I mean?
It's all research and development, all of it. And I think this, I think that's the creative spirit. I'm not saying that's like a, that's may not be like a corporate spirit, you know, like, but like, it's a sense of like, we are learning from everything we do, hopefully, you know, and then we take what works. We take notes about what didn't, and then we do more research and development. Like we keep honing the product or the experience.
Yes.
But you never, you know, another great story I'll tell you, like again, back to the, you never know. And this is in person. We were doing a very famous work of Paul's called Orbs, and it's to Beethoven's late string quartets. And we had performed it on a matinee, and I have finished performing it. And I went out to the lobby to say hi to some friends, and there was a woman there who came up to me, and she's like, were you just in the last piece? And I was like, yes, I was. And she was talking about it, and she had a scarf on her head, and she said that she was dying of cancer, and one of the last things she wanted to do was to hear Beethoven's late string quartets. And we were, it was the only place she could go to hear that music. And I'm standing there in the lobby, and it's like a check yourself moment. Like you don't know who's in that seat, whether it's live or on a screen, what they're going through, what their story is, and what you might be giving them as a transformative moment. And I think technology has a role in that. So it's again, it's listening and looking for those moments. And like, you know, students in Italy reaching out, you know, the students who took class, this woman who said like, this was one of the most important things for me at the end of my life. Like, you're doing the work, you're doing good, you know, and as long as you keep listening for those moments,
Yeah. Everything you just said across the past 10, 15 minutes feels like too, it stays true to what you said earlier about like modern dance and driving modern dance forward and continuing modern dance is what it's all about. And like that sits in the middle of that rehearsal room. And everything you just talked about felt like it was still in service to that.
Yeah. I think modern dance, it can be a bit esoteric for a lot of people in the sense that like you've ballet and contemporary and where does modern sit? And I love modern dance was born out of a rebellion to ballet, and it was born out of a need to express the individual self. It wasn't an imperial system. Mm-hmm. It was literally an individual. Like it was actually five women independently, just like liberating expression and letting it present itself in a physical form. That's not an era. That's a perspective on dance making. So in terms of modern dance going forward, and the reason we named our benefit last year Modern Is Now, Stories of Our Future, and this year Modern Is Now, Illumination, like modern is now, like what we're expressing now, the stories we're sharing now, that's we're always being modern in that regard. And we keep it going forward.
You guys are amazing as ever. I'm so glad that you joined us. Would you tell everyone where to find Paul Taylor across the next handful of months in the spring?
Oh my God, yes. So you are going to go to www.paultaylordance.org. And you'll see a touring calendar on there. We are going to Harrisburg. So this is all like spring 22. We'll be in Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Minneapolis. We'll be in New York City for the New York City Dance Festival. Sorry, for the City Center Dance Festival at City Center. That's in March. We will also be in Naples, Florida, and a host of other things that are happening in 2022. But our website and our Instagram is our major platform for communication. So you can check us out on Instagram at Paul Taylor Dance.
You all are incredible and an inspiration, and we love you so much. Thanks for coming on and chatting with us.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome. Yeah.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
I just learned so much about Paul Taylor.
I even learned a few new things.
All this archive, like the notebooks and that flipping of the performance somehow.
That was awesome. I never heard that story.
What? These stories are amazing. Like, I want more of those little stories.
So I was so glad that he has actually told me that story about the woman who was in the audience who was dying of cancer. Because let me tell you something. When he told me that the first time, I was like, I'm not going to cry in front of Michael Novak. I was a mess because he's so right. It's so inherent. And I think specifically what we do because of what he said, technology, you just can't know who you're reaching, but there's like a faith, you know, that someone is taking it in and it's important to their lives. And I just, that moment that he described like encapsulates that for me.
Yeah, I love that, like the essence of like, you could never possibly know that.
No.
So now try to imagine for a second all the other things you could never possibly know. And that's who you're creating for. That's what you're creating for.
Yeah, I think like if you're listening and you don't go to a lot of dance, I have to say, as someone who did not frequent modern dance performances, they are extraordinary. I think there is so much they have in common with theater, with opera, with all the other disciplines of art in the heart of the work that they do. And I can't encourage you enough to like go on their YouTube, Paul Taylor Dance, to check out some of their filmed pieces over the years, including some of the stuff we've made with them, and to try to catch them in person if they tour through your town. Because like Michael said, there is a beautiful, authentic, and sort of really deep joy, grief, all the emotions in the dances that company performs. And it's just a delight to watch.
So we would love to hear what you thought of our conversation with Michael and when and where you're going to go see Paul Taylor. Hopefully they're coming to a city near you. And if not, as you heard from Michael, they're all over the internet and they're prioritizing and thinking really a forward-thinking way about how to bring the company out and into the world via digital and technology. So let us know, tweet at us at BWI Unlocked and use the hashtag TechTheaterCH to let us know what you're thinking.
And then of course, come to our next conversation on Clubhouse Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern. We can even talk about this conversation with everybody because the podcast episode will be out by then. You can always raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
And if you enjoyed today's episode, we would love it if you could rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and leave a review.
We would love you. Every single topic we talk about is inspired by the articles we read and share in our company Slack channel, as well as the people who join our stage on Clubhouse. So please come to Tech Theater CH on Tuesdays, share your articles, leave us a review, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.